Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 174, episode 3 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's share consciousness. It's Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. a little bit of coal gas in my life. A little bit of coal gas by my side. A little bit of coal gas, all I need. A little bit of coal gas, what I see. A little bit of coal gas in the sun. A little bit of coal gas all night long. A little bit of coal gas, here I am. A little British coal gas study to inform you, man. All right. That is courtesy of Johnny Davis, making fun of me for constantly referencing the British coal gas study. With a little Lubega. And I'm thrilled to be joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
I hate to do this to Daniel or Justin, but here we go. Work it, miles it, gray it, sight us, higher, better, geister, longer, more than daily, trending, later, ever, after, blunt is over, smoke it, hit it, rip it, makes us higher, better, snacking, stronger. Thank you so much to Hank Scipio for that Daft Punk just related AKA, and maybe that'll be vocoded. I don't know. We'll see. Daft Punk,
that was a Kanye.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, I don't know, but I hear they're cool.
Why didn't you do that? I need you right now part from that Kanye song that you were just singing.
From that MAGA anthem.
I mean, and also, guys, if you do feel like vocoding any one of my songs ever, much appreciated.
It would be so funny. It's like, you know how Stalin would be like pettily Photoshop people out of shit? Like,
yeah.
you start hiring ringers to just put the audio in, and they're like, damn, Jack fucking sang Hallelujah, and it made me cry.
You guys don't worry about it. I'm just going to turn my video off here for a second while I do this AKA.
Mountain Dew.
You hear the door open. Mountain. Again, actual Rufus Wainwright. Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious, the talented, the brilliant, Mr. Noel Brown!
R.I.P. Daft Punk, you guys, even though they haven't made a record for like 10 years.
Yeah, I know. Take,
but, I guess they just occupy this rarefied air. You notice people were like posting things as though they had died or had, they had been like dismantled or something,
right.
Like fucking Vision. It's very weird. it's a spoiler for WandaVision. Not really. No, it's not.
It's not. It's a spoiler for
the Marvel Universe at large.
The Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and I haven't seen those movies, and I don't even know how to put that together.
We good.
I think it's true. Like, it's not like they were prolific in the last few years. It's just
They did that Weeknd song Starboy, and that was like literally 7 years ago.
Right.
They haven't really done anything. I mean, they've made classic albums, and I adore them, and I love the whole scene they came from. I think it's so crazy that Daft Punk, Phoenix, and Air all came from Versailles. They lived in like Versailles, in the shadow of the palace of Versailles, and ended up making this like dope, crazy French disco. And they all went to school together and are all like equally famous in their own right.
They went to school together?
They're all like buddies. They all grew up together.
Oh, I felt like Phoenix is like slightly younger than the other two, but that
they're
makes sense.
Roughly maybe same, mentor age, but like they definitely knew each other. Versailles is not a big place, and then
I don't know. You've seen a lot of palaces. I think Versailles is pretty big.
The palace, for sure.
Oh, right.
The township.
Maybe not as
much.
Right. Also, great Cuban restaurant in Los Angeles.
Versailles is?
Yeah.
Nice. I also wonder how much of it is that when a band that is not associated with its actual public or like the person behind the mask hangs it up, then it's like Superman dying in the Superman comics. It's like a big deal.
That's true.
Not to make another Marvel reference.
Right.
I'm a real comic book nerd, you guys.
Marvel reference.
Superman.
Exactly, doggy.
You know how I do.
That's a really good point. It's almost like they were immortal in some way. And so to that end, like, why even like make a big deal of it? Why not just like kind of fade away? Like, why do they have to?
Right.
Okay, we're done. It's over.
Yeah, it would have been there. Maybe something powerful where they're like, there's articles being like, is Daft Punk still together? And then it's like been years and like, oh, yeah, no, we stopped a long time ago.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I'm just doing my thing. See, I have no helmet on.
So did they just make that a Starboy song, or have they been producing a bunch of The Weeknd stuff?
No. It was just, that was like one collab. And they might have done some other under the fold, kind of beneath the fold, kind of deep cut stuff. But I don't really think so. They did that Tron movie. Yeah, it was before The Weeknd song. They did like Tron Legacy, the soundtrack for that.
And then that was a dope soundtrack, though.
It's super dope. And they put out like a expanded version of like all the outtakes or whatever. And they made that at Henson Studios when a buddy of mine who lives in L.A. was working there, and he would see them coming in. You know, they don't wear their helmets, just walking around.
I was just talking about that. Another person who I knew was at Henson who was talking about seeing them without their helmets on.
Yeah,
it's just so funny. It was just a very thing like, yo, they're at Henson Studios.
They're human beings.
Right.
Go work at Henson Studios if you want to have your childhood just demolished. Because you're watching like Big Bird walk around without his head on and shit, I'm sure.
Right. Have you ever been to Henson Studios?
I have not.
It's so like it. You can tell like some people that work there have worked there since the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because like there's like a person who like works there who's like their desk is just surrounded like by like dark crystal props and stuff. And they're like so kind, and like they feel like you feel like you're on Sesame Street the way some of these people interact with you and shit. And then they like loan out space to like, struggling media companies who just want to be like, we're on the Henson lot. And then you have a very nervous meeting that you realize.
I did go to ILM once in San Francisco, and it's the same deal. Industrial Light and Magic, where it's like, you walk down the hall and there are these like the dusty ass Slimer, rubber suit thing. And like, but it's like, they don't really take care of it. They've got all these like plates on the walls from like the kind of, like, when they used to do matte paintings for like Star Wars backdrops. And they're just like, they're all painted on shower doors. And like the person that gave us the tour explained like, oh, shower doors were available at this like hardware store next to where ILM used to be. And it was easier than ordering the real stuff. And they're just like on the walls, but they're all like covered in dust and stuff. And it doesn't seem like they really see them with the reverence that like you or I would see them
because like I was like, yo, that's from that's from Labwick, whatever. I'm calling stuff out, and they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, it's criminally spider-fucked with all the webs on it. Like, exactly. But I get it. This is your office, and like, fuck it. That's just some old shit we don't fuck with anymore. Man. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Spider-fucked is a very specific condition that a lot of my outdoor outdoor tools and furniture gets that I've never heard put that way, but that needs to be immediately coined, trademarked, spider-fucked.
It's spider-fucked.
All right, Noel, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, a couple of the things we're talking about. We'll talk about that minimum wage hike. Where is it? Just that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Gab. We're going to talk about whether tech is making us more productive. We're going to talk about the upcoming inauguration of the president on the 4th of March. If you're not up on your QAnon game. The real inauguration. What we saw was a fake inauguration for the corporation that is America, but the real state that is America actually doesn't have its inauguration until the 4th. And that's when Donald Trump will finally accept office. We'll talk about sneaker resellers, specifically one who got his mom's fired from being in charge of Nike North America. Or not fired. He caused her to resign. But we'll talk about what New York City streets could look like in the future. All of that, plenty more. But first, Noel, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history, friend?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I just typed in Trump golden calf CPAC. And that was for y'all's benefit for a little later in the episode. If you don't know what that is, I'll make sure to discuss it when the time is right. I'll talk about it now. Are you covering CPAC? Have you talked to any about CPAC?
Yeah, we referenced the golden calf, but we didn't talk about the literal prayer sesh.
Okay, so you saw the bizarro statue with like the giant golden wearing,
but we didn't see what ended up with it.
Okay, well, I just heard about this today, so you guys are way ahead of me. But that was my last search.
What's the prayer sesh, Miles?
Dude, the people they prayed on it, like in prayer,
like laid hands upon it.
Yes,
and shit?
The fucking religious people did the fucking thing we were joking about.
Wow,
of being like. You're praying to a false golden idol.
Right.
Yeah.
As
is that
quote
just
unquote
lost on
ordained.
Them? Are they?
This is what I said. I think the only thing that makes, because it's so on the nose, right? That they are literally trying to provoke God into bringing the end times. I'm pretty sure that's what they think is going to happen. That's the only way, because that's what they're hell bent on. They're like, well, moving the embassy moving the embassy in Israel didn't do it. Fuck. What else you got to do? All right, I guess we'll pray to this golden idol and
but
maybe
the
God will come down and smite us.
So
I don't know. It just
seems very imprecise. I don't think they've thought this through fully.
Yeah.
No. And I think at the end of the day, they're not actually religious people. They're just using religion as like the shield to obscure their racism and hatefulness. And that's all it is. So I think maybe they don't even really know what that all means in the context of Christianity.
But if anybody missed the golden calf, it's Trump in board shorts. Mm-hmm. It looks like we said, it looks like a big boy statue, like a Bob's Big Boy statue. It's not a holy, sacred looking statue. It looks like shit. It looks like a Funko toy or something like.
Mm-hmm. And he's wearing flip flops and
flip flops and
half,
board shorts.
His top half is just his suit and tie. You know, the too long tie. Right. I just don't understand.
It looks like a float from a retirement party or something. My retirement parties have floats. We go big. What is something you think is underrated, Noel?
I think that laser pointers as cat toys are underrated. And I have a very personal reason for this. I recently got a cat, and she's really great, but in the morning... She likes to like just get in full crouch pounce mode and just like pounce violently on bare feet. So I literally am tiptoeing, tap dancing around my living room, try to get from point A to B and not get, you know, just mauled. So I've started using the laser pointer to distract her and point it away. And then I can scurry into the kitchen and do my shit and then use it again when I come back. So for me, it's literally like a lifesaver. But I also think this, I pose this question to y'all. Is it cruel doing this to a cat, knowing they will never catch this thing? Are they just like clean slate every time and they're okay with it and it's just fun for them? Or is it like maddening and driving them slowly insane?
I'm no feline expert. I'll let Zeitgang weigh in on that, but I know my cats love it because I get it's the only I can get my cats panting like my dog.
Right.
With the laser pointer.
You can control their every move too. Yeah. I mean, it's wild.
And it's low energy playing because it's all my wrist. And you know math, a little inch movement from 50 feet away is like a whole length of a fucking yard. So I have, my cats doing up downs and shit, running up the walls. Because it's great. Yeah, it tires them out and then they're chill and then they're not screaming in the middle of the night like they normally do.
Yep.
Super producer Anna Hosnier, resident cat spurt, says it's good exercise for them. So,
okay.
I have some experience with, so I had a dog that was basically a cat spirit in a dog body. It would like stretch out in the sun and like lick its paws like a cat and just was a cat. And also had a thing where I think we used a laser pointer with it, like with him when he was young and he like really got into it. But then it like fucked with him. And for his whole life, he was chasing like little glints of light, like around anytime they would come up.
The dark side of laser pointer.
Yeah. And would like whimper and it really fucked with him. But he, you know, he had other issues coming in. I've talked before about he was like kind of suffered from depression and
got it. So I think typically consensus is it's okay.
Unless your cat is a dog. Right. What is something you think is overrated?
I think I'm probably not super alone in this these days, but I think James Cameron has become painfully overrated. I think Terminator 2 is a perfect film, and I actually just listened to an episode of the Rewatchables on The Ringer, and they dissected T2 in a way that I'd never really thought about. I always just thought about it as this like tentpole movie from my childhood, but it really is beat for beat a very intentional and well executed movie, and it kind of knows exactly what it's doing. But like, who asked for four more Avatar movies like 15 years after the original one came out? When no one even remembers or cares about the original one. I mean, it was like a theme park ride at best. And now he's like, you know, putting all his eggs in that franchise. And I kind of think it's going to fail miserably. I don't know what you guys think. I'm interested to see what happens. But he's got like three or four of them planned and they're like all underwater. And I'm sure they're going to look fucking cool. But I just, I don't see it.
Definitely they're underwater like they're losing money or they're underwater as in
they're physically
that's where they
underwater.
Take place. Okay, got
they have submerged.
Submerged. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not invested in that universe at all. Like the fun for me of Avatar was more like, look what we did with 3D, y'all. Totally. You're welcome.
And then no one's done it better since. And it was really epic and memorable for that and that alone.
Right. But you're like, colonizer, savior narratives aren't going to play well in the year of our Lord's 2021 and beyond.
Sure.
Especially when people are like, yo, isn't this Fern Gully also? Mm-hmm. No, this was Fern Gully. Like
Fern
straight
Gully,
up.
But, it's Dances with Wolves. It's like The Last Samurai. I mean, it's tired, man.
Yeah, exactly. But Fern Gully, you know, as I rank those films that you just mentioned, Fern
I know Gully. The baddie rap from Fern Gully almost by heart. I had that on cassette when I was a kid, and I still recite it while drunk at parties occasionally.
There you go. A barrel of laughs.
I liked Avatar a lot when I watched it. I am a serial underestimator of James Cameron. There has not been a James Cameron movie since I've been looking forward to them that I didn't talk about how it was going to be a complete debacle, like starting with Titanic. That was a whole story about like how he was losing so much money on that and it was a disaster and everybody fucking hated shooting it. Nobody wanted to like be there. It was famous for being a complete disaster before it came out, and then it became famous for being like the most successful movie of all time. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing with Avatar. Avatar is weird because it is such a like it didn't. You're right that it didn't really have a cultural impact other than, you know, Jamie Loftus's Avatar culture that she's embraced.
I think you can't say it didn't have a cultural impact people still want to go to a theme park, and there were support groups for people who wanted to go back to Pandora.
It's just weird how, it was just most movies like that have that sized cultural impact. Like then there is some follow through. There's something that happens afterwards. And Avatar, for some reason, I just feel like maybe because it's such a kind of insular world or like a completely closed off world that like it doesn't come up that often. And like you said, it was also telling a story that has been told a number of times, of like white guy comes in and becomes like essentially goes them. Native, and then that like saves them. You know, I have heard recently some like a Chapo Trap House like had a like Avatar appreciation episode where they were like talking about how the politics were really like great in Avatar. But I do feel like it's more of a that is like a backlash to the backlash where it's like this right. is
yeah.
it's silly of us to say this. I still really enjoy it. Like I just very specifically remember the physical sensation of my eyes being dried out from not wanting to blink while I was watching it. Like no, that.
It was huge. Yeah.
But Jack, fantastic. You banging down the doors for Avatar 4?
I mean, I'm going to watch every single one of them in the theater.
And, like, and I am too. No question
the theater?
About it.
Hold up. Hold on.
We'll see, about that. Let's see.
Yeah. Right. Right. I mean,
but yeah, I mean, it's, I think at the very least, what we know is they don't go this far unless they have the marketing research to suggest they're going to make their money point. Back. So as much as we might not be interested or not, I think as a tentpole event, it may draw people in. But yeah, to the extent that the first one did, I don't know.
I mean, they do go this far sometimes. Like sometimes the John Carter of Mars or whatever that movie was, that like they went pretty damn far with that and then realized they were out over their skis. You know, there are flops all the time, and especially there are flops when there's a filmmaker who has had a bunch of success and keeps just getting hit after hit after hit, and they just have that like create a blank check. Mm-hmm. And a staff of people who don't know how to tell them the truth, then you then you get something like the Star Wars prequels that, you know, are just a very specific failure of a single person's vision.
But they did well, though. I mean, they made money.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's just, or, you know, any number of blank check Robert Zemeckis's later films.
Have we talked about Cats?
Yeah, Cats. Yeah, that guy had two huge hits, and they were like, all right,
he's
now
the Broadway guy.
Cats.
Give him Cats,
yeah.
The weird one. That, like,
yeah. Right. Yeah. By the way, somebody asked if I am a fan of the podcast Blank Check. I am. I like that show a lot, and they do a great job of documenting. You know, they'll do an entire series of like a filmmaker's career, and you get to like watch as they go from like huge success to, you know, what comes next when they get the heat check, as it were. But anyways, that would be something I recommend, a Blank Check podcast over Rewatchables. I've gone from Rewatchables to Blank Check, I think.
Cool. Check it out.
You heard it here.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break and we will be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And let's talk about that $15 an hour minimum wage. Still way too low, but at least a step in the right direction. And where are we at, Miles?
Where are we? Where are we? Who are we? Where are we? Who won? Who won the election? Who is president? Who is vice president? What did they all say on their way to wanting
Joe,
to be that?
Joe Biden's inner monologue. Hey,
who am I? Where am I? Where's the applesauce? The one good CPAC one. Who's the boss? Where's my applesauce?
That's so fucking stupid.
Anyway, so yeah.
What does that even mean?
Because it's all taking shots at his mental acuity. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
His senility.
Okay.
So yeah, the 2020 campaign, Joe Biden, he was out here saying, we're gonna get the minimum wage up to 15 because I'm the guy who knows how to do government. Then cut to, sorry, the parliamentarian said it's tricky, so we're going to cave. Okay, now everyone's like, who the fuck is this parliamentarian? Essentially, the parliamentarian is this nonpartisan advisor on like the legislative process and protocol in terms of like how the Senate works. So they'll flag stuff where you'd be like, well, if you want to do this under budget reconciliation, this might be a thing. They kind of just vet what's happening to make sure everything's on track. Again, it's an advisor. And they're nonpartisan. They just nerd out on the rules to let, you know, make sure things all going okay.
And so, I've never heard of them before once in my life.
Me neither.
Definitely not when the Republicans were in charge. They weren't like, well, but the parliamentarian says the Democrats might be mad.
Yeah. Or what? So here's the deal. This whole thing about the wage hike, they put it in, you know, we talked about budget reconciliation, which is the way the Republicans basically got all this nasty shit done through a simple majority because it usually related to spending or taxes. And that's how they were able to pass things on a majority. The Democrats are currently trying to use budget reconciliation as a way to get the stimulus package through and attach this federal wage hike of $15 for minimum wage. So the Senate parliamentarian just said, okay, like, as I see it, this could be problematic in that potentially the Republicans could raise a point of order when they're voting on this to this specific bill or provision in the bill and potentially strip that out by raising a point of order. Now, what does that mean? So here's the other thing. This just means potentially the Republicans could do that. But to understand what the parliamentarian's role is, first of all, the advice is non-binding. It's just advice. The presiding officer of the Senate is the ultimate decision maker and can ignore the parliamentarian, in which case would most likely be the vice president, Kamala Harris. Mm. That's who would be it.
Which was the pitch, right? The whole thing. Like, she's going to be the tiebreaker. Everything's going to be good.
Tiebreak. If the minimum wage is in the COVID-19 bill and they want to raise a point of order, Kamala Harris could reject the point of order. Boom. $15 an hour. Boom. 32 million people living under the poverty line would be helped and countless others. But they are looking like the Sheba dog meme with the two energies that this administration has. 2020 campaign, Joe had his chest up. Oh, Saudi Arabia,
the
pariah
term is
state.
Brolic?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you for all the New York rap fans out
thank
there.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you, Dunny, as Mobb Deep would say. But like out there, 2020 camp, $15. And then in office, like, well, I don't know. Like, you know, the parliamentarians. So what the fuck is going on? So then they ask the administration, what's going on? This is a quote from the Biden National Economic Council director, Brian Deese. The vice president's not going to weigh in. The president and the vice president both respect the parliamentarian's decision and the process.
Decision?
Exactly. That's
Kamala Harris ran in the primary on $15 minimum wage. If you supported her in the primary, you remember this. Most people will, she was getting a lot of support because she was saying, yeah, fucking $15. That makes sense. On top of that, but here's the deal. Joe Manchin is a no on the $15 minimum wage, so shit's already all fucked up. But there are options to figure this out rather than just saying, that's the roadblock. You could sort Joe Manchin out. You could try and figure out if there are other Republicans who realize, yeah, that's actually, that'll help me in my whatever reelection bid. But again, another pebble on the scale to shift power to the fascists in 2022.
Is this just dead? The debate's just
no, it's
over?
Not dead. They're just kind of figuring out like, well, what do we do? I know, you know, Bernie Sanders said he's going to try and force a vote on this. But, you know, the other thing is, like, they could fire the parliamentarian because it's all about how they're interpreting the Byrd rule, which is all wonky shit. And you could just get another parliamentarian and be like, yeah, I'm good with this.
But like, the parliamentarian doesn't matter, right? Like, that's just advice they're getting.
No,
it's all optics. It's just like the idea of like, we're playing nice. We're playing by the rules.
I mean, exactly. They want to play by the quote unquote rules. But like all the rules we're seeing in terms of voting on legislation seem to be just there to ensure minority rule or completely muck up the gears when people are trying to swiftly, you know, progress any kind of law or, you know, statute.
That's frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, they're not treating it like a fucking big deal. And it's the progressives like the Rashida Tlaibs and AOCs, Cori Bush type people who are like, what the fuck are you guys doing? It's no surprise that the younger members of the party are the ones who are the closest in understanding what the tensions are that are pulling on people financially in the country versus, you know, 20K freezer Nancy Pelosi with the Jennies blowing out. Like,
right.
Like, please listen to them. Like, they're not, this isn't like some like weird ploy to make you look bad. They're saying these are the needs of the American people. There's nothing else to that.
Right.
And it's already a drop in the bucket. I mean, it's already not nearly enough for like a living wage in cities like Los Angeles or in cities like New York. It makes no sense that this is this hard to get through when there hasn't been a wage hike in what? How many years? Decades, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at $7.75 right now, right?
What about cost of living increases? Like, I mean, that's like basic human shit.
It's definitely not keeping pace with anything else, like in the economy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you just look at like sort of the way, like even the rules, right, that were fed from like, you know, your early financial literacy, it's like, well, you know, don't 50% of your annual income goes to housing. Or something like that, and 30 to discretionary expenses, 20 to savings, or maybe some people say don't spend more than a third on your income on rent. But that's hard fucking now. And when you look at what people need to be paid, like $15 an hour is a fucking joke.
Right. It's very easy for, like, I mean, where there's a will, like, it's easy for me to say this, but it's true. It's been true throughout the history of American politics that, like, it, you can play politics, but, or you can just be like, well, they said no. So, like, that's our, if you don't actually want to get anything done, it's very easy to do that and just pretend like it's somebody else's fault.
Right.
But that, or completely, like, unacceptable.
I mean, I know this as, like, somebody who, like, there's chores I want to get out of.
Right.
And I'll be like, damn, if, like, one thing goes wrong, I'm going to use that as a reason to not do that shit when they ask why that didn't get done. Gosh. I'm like, well, you know, I went to the store. They didn't have the right gravel.
Right.
So,
of course.
I'm gonna have to push that to another few days or whatever. Versus, yeah, like, okay, well, if you really wanted to do that shit, how come you didn't get it done? Well, come on, why are you making it hot? I'm lazy, okay?
You sound like my 4-year-old when I'm trying to get him to repave the driveway.
Prep the damn driveway. The gravel truck's gonna be here 10 minutes.
All right, let's talk about a couple things happening on the right. One is Gab. We talked last week about how Parler is just a, they're having a hell of a time providing a, both Gab and Parler having a hell of a time providing a competent alternative to the social media platforms that have banned Nazis. And it seems like there might be, I don't know why they're so consistently bad. Like, maybe it's, there's an informal internet democracy going on where the fact that most of humanity hates fascists is hurting the fascists. But so we talked on Monday's episode, I think, about how Parler was hacked, stripped clean of all its data, revived as a glitchy mess with no archive and basically rendered useless by not being usable on smartphones. Well, now Gab, who I think a lot of people first heard of when they, like, live streamed just a mass shooting at the New Zealand mosque. They had 70 gigabytes of private posts, passwords, and other data just downloaded and now being made available to researchers, journalists, and social scientists. So they're, this is not being like WikiLeaked where it's just like we're dumping it and anybody who wants it can exploit it. It's actually being specifically given to targeted people who will use it for good and for research.
Not just for memes and lols?
Yeah, not just for memes and lols. But it is interesting just how bad these platforms are at doing what they intend to. It seems like there's like a sort of sleeping giantization of, like, most people have a conscience and are you know, not happy with that these platforms exist. And so you're able to just through the fact that the vast majority of people who know how to code and the vast majority of hackers are going to be on the side of, you know, common decency to fuck these people over.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like hate kind of fucks you up and you start missing a lot of stuff when you're so focused on giving your energy away to, like, taking shit away from other people.
Yeah.
But hey, I don't know. I mean, great. Keep fucking up and people will always be able to track this shit and try and bring some accountability to them. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm sure these are great resources for the researchers. So I hope we get something good out of it for sure.
Do you think it's just because they have such a big target on them, or are, like, Republicans just typically very bad with technology? Because you see this kind of stuff happen with campaigns a lot, or I don't know. Like, it just always has struck me that the right isn't quite. That's not true, though. The Trump used technology to great success.
Yeah.
It's just these breaches just seem like they are either just willfully ignorant, or like they think they're safe, or they don't care, or it just seems like, you know, with the Parler thing, they were using like a trial version of Okta, the 3-factor authentication thing, and like it was just not even hard to hack. You could barely even call it a hack. They just exploited like an obvious weakness in the platform. And I think that sounds a lot like what happened here.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it sounds like they're using free trials and shit. Like, I think that was part of the Parler hack, was that like their part of their software was written with like a free trial that expired or something. Yeah. It's just, I think this is partially like, you know, polite society being like, well, it's not good for us to have money invested in Nazis. We've learned that from history, and therefore, right. you know, it's like partially the mainstream culture kind of working.
Bezos, sick yacht, dude. What is this yacht cost? $4 billion? He's like, yeah, man, I went in on Nazis, bro. Invested heavily on that right. shit.
Like, right. Ugh. All right. Real quick, anti-sponsored content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here to crisis pregnancy centers whose ads were, sir, I'm sorry people had to hear that shit.
Yes. We had an ad. This is something that happens from time to time, and trying to document fuckery in 2021 United States is like drinking from a fire hose of shit. But one way a terrible right-wing grift can guarantee that they'll get on our radar is by sneaking an ad onto our ad network, and that ad appearing on the Daily Zeitgeist. That's how we spent a year saying fuck Fox News, fuck Rush Limbaugh, and fuck the Koch brothers right. at the top of the episode. And now we will add fuck crisis pregnancy centers to that list. Specifically, Real Alternatives ran an ad on the Daily Zeitgeist. This is just like, I mean, Noel, you understand this as a fellow podcaster. This is just like there are some ads that just get filled in that we do not approve, have not.
It's like an opt-in, opt-out in totality thing per show, basically.
Right.
And then it takes us to hear to be like, oh, no, we opt out from
yes.
that. Yeah.
But, you know, this is something that we have specifically asked not to have on our network, but that sometimes still sneaks through. And so this is, you know, anytime that happens, we do want to take a moment to kind of educate people about the shitty thing that ran an ad. So real quick summary of what crisis pregnancy centers are. They disguise themselves as actual medical clinics. While being staffed by volunteers with no medical training, the medical advice they give is shot through with misinformation about abortions and just about women's options when they are pregnant. It's purely ideologically driven to try to steer anyone who comes to them with a pregnancy away from abortion. Right. And just disguising that by they claim they give false information about pain caused to the fetus in abortion. They give false information about depression being a symptom or something that's caused to a woman who has an abortion. They will even delay ultrasounds to make sure the mother hears a heartbeat because that's like the anti-choice equivalent of like propaganda.
Yeah, the heartbeat bill, right?
Right. And people who got care at a facility were told that abortion is a liberal elite scheme trying to at black population control, basically.
Jesus Christ.
So they do a lot of damage and fuck
them. It's manipulative. It's fucking evil. The fact that you set up a scam, like a prank show set, where you have all this medical equipment around you to give some semblance of legitimacy is so fucking cynical and fucked up. Yeah, like it's just straight trash. And you see billboards like when the billboards are like worse. It's like a confused pregnant person with their hand right. on their head. And it's like, oh, are you pregnant? Don't worry. We're here to help. Yeah. And then they want to talk you out of just doing whatever you want to do with your own body, right. Which is so fucked up. So, yeah, eat a pile of shit. Well,
when I read about it originally, like from this, I'd never heard of it. It sounded to me like super culty, like they're trying to, like, you know, indoctrinate women or like get them to convert to Christianity or something. But it turns out it's also like it is that. But it's also like, you know, in terms of the data, it's a lot of people that are already going in that direction anyway. So I don't quite understand the point.
Yeah, there's a study on it that says like it's a lot of preaching to the converted, and like the people who take advantage of it usually were already planning on having giving birth to their child. But the study is a little bit limited in the sense that it only sampled people who went to those clinics and then actually gave birth. So it doesn't sample anybody who went to those clinics and then had an abortion. And
yeah, either way, the existence of something like that is fucked up. You know,
and also,
I mean,
all you have to do is look at the advertising strategy of them and like the billboards, Miles, you're talking about, the fact that they're like putting ads, just like blasting ads across podcast networks to be like, hey guys, we're here to help. You can go to www.exposefakeclinics.com to kind of learn more about this practice. But it's also taxpayer funded. So yeah, culty, but also, you know, funded by you, your money. So, all right. This is an article from Wired that I really liked. It's written by a guy named Cal Newport, who just released a book called A World Without Email. And he basically raises this overarching point that tech might just be making us busier and not actually making us more productive. Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's who'd have thought? For all the times we're like, yeah, man, because look, we all see shit and we see a technological advancement and go, oh, wow, that makes that thing so much easier, actually. Thank you, technology. And he just kind of raising this point. It's like we have to kind of stop defaulting to being like all tech makes working so much easier and collaborating easier and therefore will be more productive when the data does not support that at all. He's talking about when the PC came out and began being worked or introduced into workplaces. People were like, wow, this thing is great, and it's making everything easier. But a lot of when they really started crunching the numbers as to what was happening, like in these like major corporations with the introduction of computers, they were like, nah, there's this kind of a disconnect between like what's easy and like what's effective. It seems to actually like it sort of rearranges people's time in a way that causes more issues. Like, so for example, they did a study like back in the late 80s and 90s about these five major corporations that were replacing their typing pools, like where people were the typists to get you your documents and shit, with word processors where people could like type on computers and get that shit, quote unquote, a lot easier or quicker. But they found that the typing pool, all their work fell to the people whose work they were supporting as a typing pool, and then created a need for now more expensive, higher paid managers to keep the newly minted typists to keep churning out the work. So it really increased staffing costs by 15% with not even this, not a proportionate increase in output or productivity. Yeah. So now the focus is being put on this for this writer talking about, you know, Slack and email is kind of like this whole new thing where, you know, this is a quote from him, says in 2005, or just based on numerous studies found in 2005, we were sending and receiving 50 emails a day. In 2006, it jumped to 69. By 2011, it was 90. Today, we send and receive an estimated 126 messages, checking our inboxes once every 6 minutes on average. So we're basically spending more time just talking about work and right, not having like the uninterrupted hours to do the work. So that's why they're like, what? We actually need to have a reckoning here, because like Gmail is now even finishing our sentences, which seems convenient, but like, is that actually going to make me more efficient?
And no, it'll just allow you to get to the next email quicker. So right, that you're, you know,
constantly distracted. And I think the answer to this problem isn't easy, even as the author of the opinion piece says, it's not going to be easy, but we have to actually begin to slow down and begin to solve this issue, because it's like this weird, that's the productivity paradox, as it's called. Like, we don't know how much it's actually helping. And points to like other industries where they have more of like a project, like project management protocols, where teams spend less time talking what they're doing. And it's like check boxes and being like, these are my tasks I have to get done. Tick, 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 tick. I'm done. I can check in when I'm done with my tasks versus like, hey, where's that task? Do you know this? Checking in on this task and leave people to their own devices to just start work uninterrupted. But that only works for specific industries. And I think it's this, I think opinion piece raises like the larger question of how are we going to ourselves try and solve this problem by taking a moment to look at these inefficiencies.
Yeah. Giving us busy work that we can do efficiently while not making our overall productivity any higher, and also not giving us like any way of any time to think about whether like the overall like philosophical and ethical implications of the work we're doing. Like right, that feels like a huge chunk of what we're dealing with. Like in a world where the problem is that we keep observing the same social injustices over and over and over, and nobody's ever doing anything about them. Like that feels super relevant that we're right, that it, we're it, And like, just that, I feel like this expands to social media too, right?
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, even the way you talk about it too, it's just sort of like what the pandemic offered people societally for a moment, where shit slowed down very quickly. And now we had in 1 year increased class consciousness, increased consciousness around white supremacy and things like that, that I'm sure, I mean, like, I don't think those things are unrelated, like, because right. we had the time to think, to see, to process, well, versus like, I gotta get this done. I know that shit happened. Oh, another unarmed person got killed, but I gotta send these emails. Oh, my boss hit me up on Slack. I gotta get, like, yeah. Where do you find the time to say, wow, what, how do I solve, like, I'm seeing people who are hungry in my neighborhood. Like, what am I, what's going on? How do we, are there things I can put my energy towards?
On the flip side of that, though, that's probably how QAnon started too. You know, people had this like gap they needed to fill, you know, and like, you know, soccer moms at home clicking around on the internet, looking for something to kind of validate their feelings, you know, and then they start going down these like internet rabbit holes. And I think that's how that picked up so much steam and got mainstream so quickly. So I do think there's like a dark side to it as well.
Oh, I don't think anything is absolutely good or bad, but yeah, I think, but overall, I think we would greatly benefit, at least in the context of, I mean, shit, you know, I'm glad people woke the fuck up even slightly, but absolutely. At what cost? The other thing though, with our workplaces now is, how are we, like, we have to like kind of think about what this whole way of work, like what our whole mode of working is. And does it make sense to do this thing of like, everyone is interconnected at the exact same time, and we can start firing off messages to each other without overloading our own circuits and capacity to just do like focused, you know, work, whatever 100%. Our jobs are.
Or even like all these like unnecessary Zoom meetings about other meetings. And like you said, it's all just meta think kind of about right. talking about working instead of actually doing something. You have to like talk about it first and then kind of agree. And you could have just done all that in the first place, or had it be like one email instead of an hour, you know, waste of time Zoom call.
Yeah, because they talk about even just like how certain activities in the beginning with like a computer were more efficient, but just it creates more work, right? So like if you're like you were running a business, instead of having an accountant update your ledgers that were on paper, a business owner is like, well, I got QuickBooks now, I got a spreadsheet now, I can do this, and
I can
yes,
do
they
this
may be
just a little bit worse than my accountant,
right? Exactly, which is right. fine. I get it. It might be easier than this paper book that you have to like work through, but. Over, like they're saying, but practically, business owners now just have less time to do the other things that might be more important, because they're like, well, since it's easier, I can take this on. And what we're doing is we're being like, well, that's easier, I can take that on, I can take it on. And then we're becoming more and more unbalanced.
Yeah. I think this is part of the overall issue that like we'll be continuously documenting, of just overall, like kind of broad but invisible social issues that are giving us a lot of the issues that we're having right now. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back. And real quick update, Trump's secret inauguration is this week. I don't know if you booked your room at the Trump Hotel in D.C. yet. But yeah, if you haven't been paying attention to the QAnon, the World O QAnon, Q actually hasn't posted since December. But there are theories being propagated by the Sovereign Citizens, a loose movement of anti-government extremists who believe they are immune from the law. There are some really fun videos of these people
They're called
tased.
The fuck around and find out clips, yes, on YouTube.
Where you get to see them fuck around and find out in one very satisfying clip. They're also started with like a 1970s super anti-Semitic theory based around posse comitatus. And yeah, it all goes back to, you know, white supremacy.
It all goes back to anti-Semitism or race. I don't know. Yeah.
But so they believe March 4th is going to be the real election, because 1933 was the year when inaugurations were changed from March 4th to January 20th. And in case you don't recognize 1933's importance, that was the year that FDR sold the U.S. citizens to foreign interests. I don't know if you knew that, but that happened. So Trump, the big piece of evidence they're pointing to that proves this is true is that Trump's D.C. hotel jacked up its rates by 180% for March 4th. Usually the least expensive room at Trump International is $476, but now it comes at $596 per night on that night. By the way, just a fun little fact, the least expensive room at Trump International comes with a king-size bed with a opulent headboard topped with a gilded crown. So
cool.
Just to set the scene. But yeah, the reservations team from the hotel, I think Snopes did some reporting on this, and the reservations team was like, it could just be because so many people are trying to book a room that night because they believe this bullshit theory.
Yeah.
And it's, we do poor supply and demand.
What are they going to do, the QAnon community? I mean, like, you can only kick the can down the road so much before there's no can or road to even do this with anymore. Like, right, this, the moving of the goalposts. And I see this a lot, like, especially in the fallout of like the reality check of the inauguration that a lot of people had of like trying to figure out what they start saying now. Like, do we keep saying that we know what's going to happen? Do we not? Are we sure about this March 4th thing? Like, for especially for the people who are peddling this bullshit, because clearly they're worried too about like, well, I can't fuck up my my trustworthiness as a Q misinformation peddler. That like, it's also there's divides within QAnon to be like, well, some people think it's March 4th. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. There was like a internal schism between people who at first said March 4th it was going down, but then started backpedaling when they realized that literally nothing that they've been predicting has actually happened. And so they, you know, it's now a pattern among the smart Q people to be like, yeah, this is going down. It's March 4th. And then like right before that, be like, actually, we just got new intelligence and we're going to push that off to March 20th, I think.
Actually, I meant March 45th. And then go March for 45. and really, that is April 14th. Oh my God. Like, fuck.
That April actually 5th, made,
oh, that's what it is. March 45th, made, tax day, April 15th. Oh my God, y'all. You're
that
welcome.
Actually makes so much sense. Yeah. You should do this for a living. But
I
other
forget better conspiracy theories than these motherfuckers take years to think of.
But they think that like they're also the people who are like, we need to take things into our own hands and make this happen on March 4th. So they have left, I think, 5,000 National Guard troops in DC,
right.
Just to because there is so much chatter around this.
I mean, there's always like, what does that look like if this thing happens the way they're hoping? They just like wheel him into town on like a golden chariot and like crown him or something. Like, I mean,
yes,
it's like some fucking Ghostbusters shit. It sounds like Zool or something. It's really, really sinister.
The Scolari brothers. Like, what the fuck? Like, it really is fantastic. It's that like, it's like you would write it in your own way. Joe Biden and Kamala will be in cuffs and they have to walk by President Trump as he salutes them flippantly. And we're going to love it. And then it's like, what the I don't know. I mean, but I guess that's how invested these people are in their like oppressive
fantasy life,
fantasy world. Yeah, that's their avatar. You know what I mean? Like, this is their support group circle. For going
you
back
did
to
it.
Pandemic, Pandora, baby.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah, I wonder what that overlap is from the Pandora support group people and like January 6th insurrectionists.
I mean, they're definitely providing the same service to people,
right? Like, remember that time,
right? There is research that's suggesting that like most QAnon people like don't actually believe the stuff. It's like more of a like half-hearted. They read about it because it's like a fun story for them to believe in. But it like they're not actually gonna do anything with their chest out. So those are probably the April 14th people. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean at the end of the day, like even when they do like those polls where it's like only 7% of Americans believe QAnon, you're like, that's millions
of
people.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Let's talk about sneaker resellers. This gentleman who goes by the name of West Coast Streetwear. On Instagram, I think.
Don't make him sound cool.
I think he's very cool, Miles.
He's a piece of shit reseller.
I love just the built-in hostility for this guy.
Okay, let me tell you something. As a fucking lifelong sneakerhead, all sneakerheads know now, the refrain is the game is all fucked up now.
Yes.
It used to be people fucked with sneakers because they wanted them, some to collect, but mostly to wear, because that was our way of expressing ourselves. Like, yo, I got these fresh kicks on or whatever. That's our personal thing. And then resellers completely fucked the game up, where these people try and buy large amounts of product to take away from people who want to wear them personally. And then they resell them on your eBays or your StockX or consignment stores for massive profits, because sneaker culture has become much more popular, that now coveted pairs of shoes are going for thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of dollars.
Sort of so, like the ticket scalper is using bots and all of that. I mean, similar situation.
And no different. Bots are being used for sneakers and like sneaker drops, where suddenly it used to be like you could line up outside of a Foot Locker. And if you were there in the morning when they opened up, you could get the shoe you wanted because you were there, because you bothered to get up, or you were online, you bothered to refresh the Foot Locker or Nike website, and then you hit click, and then you were like, yes, okay, I got my shit.
Yeah.
But now shit, it's like fucking locusts devouring shit. Like the second you try and load the page, like sold out, and you're like, how in the fuck did this happen?
Well, I will tell you how that happened.
Yeah.
So this was just, if nothing else, an interesting look at like how what you're describing happens for somebody who's like, I only, you know, I'll try and get the shoes when they drop every once in a while, almost never am successful. And eventually, like, you know, spend too much money on the shoes on StockX or GOAT. The reason for that, this is just like a look at his day on a day that there's a big shoe drop. The day these Yeezys were released, he'd woken at 3 a.m., signed onto the messaging platform Discord, gotten 15 members of a cook group, a term sneaker resellers used to describe like basically people who work for them, they all just like get together, use code and buy up all the shoes, which are supposed to only go to one customer. By 6 a.m., the shoes were sold out and his bots had rung up $132,000 on his Amex. And then in almost as little time as it had taken him to buy them, he had sold them for a $20,000 profit. Yeah.
Wait, where did he get $132,000 on his Amex from? How does a 19-year-old young man have so much capital?
So the reason this is making news yesterday is that this young man's mother turns out, and this the article actually mentions this, is the head of North American operations for a small shoe wear company called Nike. She's head North America.
I heard it was also on his mother's corporate Amex that he was using.
Wow. Huh.
To buy up shoes. And also I heard that he was using his mother's discount to procure even more pairs from certain outlets.
Right. Allegedly. He denied that.
Right. Exactly. But, I mean, so she resigned. Fucked up your mom's bag.
Yeah. She resigned. I'm genuinely not sure if she's leaving out of shame or because she's going to go run his business with him because she sees a market. Because the way they talk about this is like, yeah, no, this is, I mean, this is the thing that is eye-opening about this article is that they're like, this is just what stock traders do every day. Like what this dude does. And that's always been my suspicion, is that like the stock market is all about just finding these little inefficiencies, making people pay, just gaming a vast system to try and eke out, like find a market, make money off that market, and not provide literally any value to anyone.
Not to mention if you have access to one of those like Bloomberg terminals or whatever, which costs like $100,000 a year or something insane to have access to, or if you have this kind of insider information on, you know, the sneaker situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. And we're obviously moving toward this, like everything is a commodity, you know, society, like with things like, you know, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency that literally represent nothing but are just bought and sold and traded and using all this energy. And so I'm sorry, I've been on a soapbox, but it's just, it's all kind of part and parcel of the same conundrum, right?
Yeah.
The big issues for me too are like, one, as a sneakerhead, specifically his mother's purview was running the sneakers app, which anyone who tries to buy hype sneakers knows Nike only has one way to get this. You go on this app, you join a queue or a lottery system, and you pray to the consumer gods that you will get a hype sneaker. Most of the time you don't. It's like a meme in the sneaker community. It's like, yep, took a L, taking another L this Saturday morning or whatever. And then to know that this guy's mother is running, I mean, like there's so many more questions I have, because it's almost like someone at Nike was backdooring their own product out of sneakers to the resale market just to get Yeah. So
is this we'll different see. And maybe less like galling to you than, or more rather than like some of those boutique shops like on Melrose that have like the these sneakers in plastic, like maybe like last year's, you know,
it's the same thing. They're just doing it's on consignment too. Like they're not selling it for the retail price. If you're not selling shit for the retail price, I'm angry. And I get it, but that's sometimes you have to go to these secondary markets to get the shoes or whatever. All that to say, a very small minor problem overall for most people. But like when you also look at the amounts of money that's being made, it's just like it's just a mirror reflection of America. But we're just seeing it play out in this very specific way.
So capitalism we keep talking about is a system that is designed to preserve capital and like help people with capital maintain their capital. It's not but this illustrates sort of something that we're seeing with like you said, Noel, the Bitcoin, the Top Shot, like the digital trading cards. It's like value is being completely decoupled from
reality. And
like they're not providing any value. They're just like shoes, I guess, are more than any of those other things, but it's just finding inefficiencies, squeezing money out of other people, you know, preying on people who are less advantaged than you. And it's just like the whole argument for a market economy is like that it uses value and like demand and supply to like allocate things intelligently. And we've just completely lost track of like that's gone and never coming back. So like I don't want to hear that argument like when people are trying to argue that like socialism is bad. It's this is not better than anything you can.
It's like healthcare. It's like, well, how much can we get away with charging people the shit? Like, well, shit, if they're going to pay it, why are we going to pay it? Why are we going to do it for less? Not to say that sneakers are the same as like life-saving insulin or something like that, but it's the like with this resale market, it's like, well, how thirsty are you for this thing? Because that's how much it costs. It's not what it's worth. I'm just going to prey on how desperate you are to even, because Daniel's in the chat right now. Yes, on StockX, there are PS5s, there are video cards, there's shit that is not even sneakers that people are like, I need it. And you're just being like, okay, well, how bad is your FOMO, Poppy?
I think it's interesting you bring up the healthcare part, because I mean, it really is just about like a lack of empathy. In this system, there's just no thinking of individuals. It's just like, I mean, this is all, it almost sounds cliche to say out loud, but it's like just profits over everything. And you don't think about human beings. And like, you know, in socialist countries or places where they have socialized healthcare, they do. Or they, you know, subsidize artists and people that are choosing to live their lives in this way, where they're providing this amazing thing for other people to enjoy. That's considered valuable. You know,
and their people are no better than our people. Their people are not you know, don't have more empathy. It's just a system. They have a system that takes that empathy and that like fundamental understanding that we will not allow somebody to die because they don't have enough money, and they take that as a baseline. Like that is what the entire system is built on, and we have a system where that is drilled out of it by billions of dollars of marketing and, you know, things that are designed to distract us from our empathy.
Yep. You know,
anyway, it's on site for this reseller. I'm telling you, the sneaker community hates this little fucking guy. This is the other thing. He would post these images of like hundreds of boxes of like Yeezys or Jordans. And people flex like this on Instagram all the time, these resellers. And you're like, how the fuck does this person have this many pairs of shoes? Like, it's impossible. Like, you don't know enough people or have enough addresses. And when you start seeing these stories, you're like, of course it's someone who's fucking hooked up at this level. But yeah.
he was not like admitting to the author of this article, like who his mom was, but at the beginning of the article when he was still collaborating with them, he was like, if you know the right people here, this is the city to sell shoes. He lives in Portland
because
his mom is the head of Nike.
North America.
The right people can give you access to stuff like that, or to stuff that like a normal person would not have access to. That's amazing that he was shrewd enough to be born to the head of Nike North America. What a brilliant businessman.
Hey, but you know what? How American. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Using your parents' connects to start fucking making your own
nepotism
coin.
Nepotism is number one. Yeah.
And then not even being like ashamed of it. Just like almost using that as another like sub flex within the like stacks of sneakers. It's
because everything's like, journalist... oh, I got it and you don't. You
right.
know what I mean?
That's the takeaway.
When the reporter was like, so we know that your mom is the head of Nike North America. He was like, you can't mention that in the article. And they were like, of course we're going to mention that.
It's going to fuck up my cred as a sneaker pirate.
And so he then stopped cooperating with the article.
And the thing is, that's not going to hurt his resale business.
No.
People are going to still buy, you know, we're still the hype economy. Because now it's global. And it's not just Americans that are paying out. Like, it's all over the place. And, it's cool.
Let's talk about something hopeful real quick. New York City Streets 2.0. Yeah. A vision that has been put out there. New York City has been through a lot of changes since the pandemic, and we've talked a little bit about how why change back if, you know, they converted miles and miles of road to pedestrian and, you know, parking or not parking, dining areas and just like basically open source communal space. That somebody has kind of put together a plan where you would take one in every four of the city's 19,000 miles of driving lanes and 3 million free on-street parking spaces and open just, you know, a thousand miles of pedestrian streets. Miles, you put this together. Yeah.
Well, it's just it's a great, I mean, it's funny right now. There's a lot of people who, like especially in New York politics, who are bringing this up as an issue for the city. Like there's local people who work for the municipality who are like, we should really think about making this permanent. There are people who are running for mayor who are like making this part of their platform about taking the streets and like being like, wasn't this great how we had like from being in our apartments, we said, hey, you can kind of walk outside and stretch your shit out and do what you got to do in the public space. So this group called Transportation Alternatives is saying, okay, 25% of the streets, if we modify it for pedestrians, what can we do? So yeah, Jack, you're saying 1,000 miles of pedestrian streets is the first thing you would create. Then it could open one car-free block for play, outdoor learning, and pick up and drop off outside of each of the city's 1,700 public schools. Okay, great. I like that. Put every resident within a 5-minute walk of 500 miles of bus lanes and 40 miles of busways. And within a quarter mile of 500 miles of like real bike lanes, like protected from cars, bike lanes, like legit bike lanes,
which is not people were biking necessarily too. It's not necessarily the case in New York City's current bike lanes. You're basically out there dodging and like bumping up again, like trying to box out a taxi while you're riding
and praying a door doesn't fly open in the middle of, you trying to get to where you got to go. And so, it just does all these other things. They could potentially plant 15,000 new trees, the equivalent of adding almost an entire Central Park to the city's canopy, 38 million square feet for neighborhoods to allocate for whatever they want. You want to build a little, soccer court for some street futsal? Cool. You want to build a basketball, handball court, whatever the fuck you
garden,
want to do.
Garden, whatever.
Yeah. And then also it established hubs for street vendors, benches, trees, public bathrooms, bike charging outside of every one of the subway stations. Like there's, when you think of like all these things that could happen, it makes you really realize like how much we can actually use these kinds of public spaces. Cause right now it's like, I know I have my house. I walk to and from on this sidewalk and then I go to my destination and everything in between is just kind of like something I pass through versus something that will add to my sense of community because that's ultimately what one of the higher benefits of something like this.
Yeah. I want to start highlighting more ideas like this that are like, Like, we should not settle for anything less than this. Like, we should not settle for, in Los Angeles, the same thing is happens with, like the 1% has all these country clubs that are the best park space in Los Angeles that you have to pay $200,000 a year to access. Right. Like, it's...
And our taxes are funding it.
And our taxes fund it. It's bonkers, and it's just, like, there are... these things that we just take as like, well, that's a given because that like are, if you just view them with fresh eyes, make literally no sense. They right. should not exist. And we need to, you know, just realize that we can change these things. We like the vast majority of people would benefit from changing these things.
Right.
And yeah, there's, so this is a overall movement in New York City. If you live in New York City, get on it, like find a way to contribute. And LA, let's do something about these fucking country clubs, man. I'm so pissed about the country clubs.
I remember, like, I had a friend who, like, whose backyard would look, you could like look into a country club, and you're like, it was the first time I had seen a country club. I was like, what the fuck is that? You got a park? And they're like, oh no, that's the Wilshire Country Club. This was somebody who's on my hockey team who's family was doing very well, and we had a team party there, and I'm like, they're like, oh yeah, you guys can go on the golf course to play bocce, and I'm like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? And I look in their back, like, I just thought it was someone else's yard, and then we hopped the fence, and I'm like, it's this whole fucking golf course
right
in this part of town I didn't know as a kid was here. And you're like, this place looks fucking magical, yet again, we're limiting the access to people who, you know, really don't need it and don't deserve it.
No.
And cutting off our outdoor spaces to like children, anybody. You can fucking go work on your devil sticks.
So a bunch of rich guys can go there and like network. And that's literally, you think they're spending $200,000 a year because they love golf? They're doing it because they know it's a good investment to, you know, make more money. And it's like a yet another, it's a literal like castle wall being put up by the 1% to allow them to do business where nobody else can access them. So fuck country clubs and fuck New York city streets until they are all parks, or at least the vast majority. Turn New York into I Am Legend. Just
mannequin parties in every intersection.
Yes, thank you, Noel. It's been a pleasure having you.
Oh, dude, always. Thanks for having me back.
Where can people find you and follow you?
Sure, you can find me. I'm pretty much just on Instagram. I'm at How Now Noel Brown, or you can listen to me on one or all of three podcasts that I'm on corporeally. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know with Ben Bolin, who's also a recurring guest on Daily Zeitgeist, folks would know, and Matt Frederick, another amazing iHeart executive producer and podcast host. And then I'm on a show called Movie Crush with Chuck Bryant from Stuff You Should Know, where we just kind of talk shit about movies once a week. And then I'm also on Ridiculous History with Ben Bolin again, who is like my official work wife. so yeah, all of those are everywhere you get podcasts.
And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
Well, I wouldn't say enjoying, but I think it's a really good point. Celeste Ng, who wrote Little Fires Everywhere, did a really nice hot take based on some things, I think, that Trump Jr. said at CPAC. It's weird how it's cancellation, in quotes, when an artist's own trust wants to remove racist work it's no longer proud of.
Right.
And that was in response to, you know, Trump saying the Muppets are canceled, but it's literally just Disney putting a little, you know, historical disclaimer saying we're aware that some of these jokes might not have aged well over time, or like say the fact that like you can't get Song of the South on Disney Plus. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. Also, the other podcast, 420 Day Fiancé, where Sophia and I are currently on a campaign to try and get Seth Rogen to come on the podcast ever since he interacted with one of Sophia's tweets. So support us as we endeavor for the Canadian stoner to grace his presence on that podcast.
You know, he's also he's a potter. He's really into pottery. Mm-hmm. Into pot gross. And making pottery.
He throws
hard
that wheel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. A couple of the tweets I like. One is from Catherine Spears, former guest, great food writer. She tweeted, I once dated a guy who had been dumped for Will Forte, and he got really angry that I didn't think Will Forte was the hottest guy on SNL. Another one is from Lindsay Gibbs at Linz Sports, LINZSPORTS, tweeting, stop glamorizing, quote, the grind and start glamorizing getting 7+ hours of sleep at night, having healthy relationships, feeling safe at work, taking sick days, being paid a living wage, working hard when you're at work, boundaries and self-caring your way to success. 100%. These are words that we do not use enough when talking about navigating our live work lives. So, yeah, sleep. Healthy boundaries, you know what I mean? Self-care, like not torturing yourself, telling yourself it's going to be okay. Don't listen to that voice in my head that's been riding with me since birth, that's kind of been fucking with me. And then also, Reductress, at Reductress tweets, quiz, did your souls meet in a past life, or did you match on Hinge 5 years ago?
Oh, man. Yeah. The world is like a half memory now. It's like, I know I fucking recognize that person.
We're on Hinge 5 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
How you doing? I'm married. Oh.
Tight. Tweet I enjoyed, Michelle King tweeted, all negative book reviews should end with, quote, despite all this, it's pretty impressive that this person wrote a book. And I agree. You can find me on Twitter, @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter @DailyZeitgeist. We're @TheDailyZeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song that we recommend. What song is our recommendation today,
Miles?
Oh,
man, you can check this on Spotify. It's called Moonlit, and it's by this producer, Context, K-O-N-T-E-K-S. Just a big lo-fi kind of beat maker that I'm really enjoying. If you're not following me on Instagram, you're missing my current musical beat journey because I just started making beats again. And if you check in, you can watch me cook, baby. So I'm loving this sample-based hip-hop. So more sample-based hip-hop from Context. Moonlit, wonderful.
All right. We are going to link off to that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.